So there began to be some agitation west of the mountains that, hey, we're paying our taxes. We're entitled to some internal improvements, too. We want some turnpikes. We want some canals. And the politicians in the eastern part of Virginia were well aware that as a practical matter, if they wanted to hang on to those western counties, they had to find a way to bind them economically as much as possible, and maybe to a lesser extent socially, to the eastern part of the state.
Around the 1820s, there was a large push to provide better access to the western reaches of the state. And Colonel Claudius Creuset was a very well thought of French engineer who had been a professor of engineering at the U.S. Military Academy at West Point. And apparently did not like the cold winters at West Point and left and came to Virginia.
Well, do you know who Claudius Creuset is? He was one of Napoleon's engineers that came to this country after the Napoleonic Wars, after 1815. And then he went to work for the state of Virginia as head of the Public Works Program. And he laid out the Stanton-Parkersburg Pike. He designed it and was overseer of its being built.
He's the one that laid out the Northwestern Turnpike, which goes from Winchester over to Parkersburg.
My great-grandfather, John Yeager, surveyed for Creuset.
This is from the Journal of the House of Delegates in 1826 and 27, another report of Principal Engineer Claudius Creuset. He had again examined the Stanton-Parkersburg Turnpike route. On Greenbrier and Cheat Mountains, the roads were excessively laborious. It was impossible in some places even to explore the country without cutting the way through thick and dark laurels.
Port Crayon, surveying all of this territory in here, kept an account every day of their travels. I believe they were in there 19 days, and his last entry was, never was any human being more happy to get out of those accursed laurels. I guess they were so thick you had to practically crawl through.
Port Crayon was the pen name of David Hunter Strother, who lived from 1816 to 1888. David Hunter Strother wrote and illustrated for Harper's New Monthly magazine, both before and after the Civil War. On his way to and from Blackwater Falls in 1857, Port Crayon spent two nights at the Andrew Fansler homestead at the present site of Hendricks. Fansler operated a tub mill near his home. Writing about the visit in Harper's magazine, Crayon said, quote, "Fansler's was the jolliest house we had yet visited. His wife was the ideal of a Flemish housewife, his daughter pretty enough to serve beer to a king, his little boys comely, sociable, and obliging. His table smoked with the best the country afforded, excellently cooked and amicably served. It took us back to the times of Chaucer, when mills were the centers of social civilization, and a miller the magnet of his district." Port Crayon's illustration of Washington Roy's family shows Roy's wife and her seven children gathered around the stoop of their home, near the smoke hole, about 4 miles north of the mouth of Seneca. Mrs. Roy puffs a corncob pipe as she breastfeeds her youngest child. All are barefoot, and one of the girls plays with a pet chipmunk as a bony hound dog looks on. In June 1856, Port Crayon visited overnight at the home of Adam Carr, quote, "The Lord Proprietor of some 2,000 acres of rocks and forest, was a mighty hunter of deer, and could tell bear stories to compete with Meshach Browning. 5 flintlock rifles of different calibers and patterns stood behind his chamber door, while skins and antlers adorned his hall in true baronial fashion. The fierce glitter of his eye and iron steadiness of his arm as he handled one of these hunting pieces, his bare, horny feet impatient of shoes except on ceremonious occasions, the rude simplicity of his speech, occasionally startling by its directness, all savored of the mountains, savage and rock-ribbed. Introduced to the supper room, we there beheld an oaken table surrounded by rude stools and benches. On it was neither cloth nor plate, cup, knife, or fork, neither bread nor meat, butter nor milk. Its nakedness was relieved only by a single large wooden bowl containing a smoken mess of frumenty, or wheat boiled in milk, a bucket of water in which floated a gourd, the outer edge opposite each seat garnished with wooden or pewter spoons. A single tallow dip candle flared and smoked over the melancholy scene. At a signal from the host, the family ranged themselves around the board. The blessing, pronounced in a tremulous voice, sounded like a prayer for strength to endure rather than enjoy the food provided for them. After the amen, the patriarch took up his wooden spoon and pitched into the bowl before him, curtly informing the stranger that he had better follow his example. Thus the family circle dipped and ate with a will, and with more merriment than one would think such a feast could provoke. When drink was needed, the dripping gourd was passed from mouth to mouth, and when the bowl of frumenty was nearly emptied, it was again replenished from the pot over the fire. At the time that Port Crayon was making his visits to the area, turnpikes were just beginning to penetrate Randolph County. So the lifestyle and the economic situation in the areas that the turnpike was penetrating would have been very similar to what Port Crayon observed where he was visiting. And I believe that this lifestyle and the families like Port Crayon observed most likely persisted in the areas penetrated by the turnpikes until many years after the turnpikes were there, back in the hills and the hollows. Principal engineer Claudius Crozet noted that for a great part of the distance between the top of Greenbrier and Cheat Mountains, horses in the driest seasons sink above their knees in the mud. He still said that he thought a good road might be made over that ground, but only with proper drainage. He felt that it was very important to get this section of the road built, because any other pieces of the road that might be built would be worthless without the road over Cheat Mountain.
It was a very difficult road to build back there in the 1830s and 40s with just horse and manpower.
They would use a plow pulled by some kind of draft animal, mules, horses, probably oxen, to begin that excavation, and men with picks and shovels then to continue the excavation. But the most of it was just plain physical, back-breaking manual labor.
One time I was talking to a road engineer. I said, well, you know, before there was modern machinery and technique for figuring out grades and all this kind of thing, how would they do that? And he said that they would take a mule and let the mule walk up the mountain. And they would watch the path of the mule. And the mule would always choose a path that was a correct grade for a horse drawing a wagon.
Oftentimes the turnpike would be longer than the older road. And you'd say, well, that doesn't make a lot of sense. If it's going to be a turnpike, it ought to shorten it. But you see, they didn't have the earth-moving equipment. And if they wanted to take a bigger wagon load, it probably meant a less steep grade. If you're going up a mountain and you cut the grade down, you have to add more switchbacks. Quite possibly, the turnpike would have been a more crooked road and a longer road than the road that it was meant to replace.
These turnpikes were nice roads, the interstate systems of the 19th century. Your average road would have been deeply rutted, full of mud, and you might have stumps sticking up in the road that might be 6 or 8 inches tall. The saying, "I'm stumped," supposedly comes from a wagon that's gone over one of these stumps and the axle has caught on the stump, and you can't go forward and you can't go backward, so you're stumped, you're stopped. But if you had a turnpike and it was authorized through the legislature, usually they spelled out that these had to be better than average. The Parkersburg Turnpike had to have easy grades. The road had to be at least 20 feet wide, and that was not including the side ditches. And there had to be a 10-inch rise from the center down to the side so you'd have good drainage. And every visible rock and stump had to be removed. The grade was not supposed to exceed 4 degrees either, which is a challenge in itself to get over the Allegheny Mountains without exceeding a 4-degree grade.
Crozet also noted, quote, A straight road will often prove more expensive than a curved one, suited to the ground, and in a case like this, ought certainly not to be preferred.
There were a number of people who bid on these sections that had no experience. Bankruptcy was a very common, or failure to complete contract. In other words, the guy just left the site and never returned. And then sometimes they would have to rebid that particular section of the road. But it was done piecemeal.